podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello, welcome everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, as well as the world's first internet radio station dedicated to startups and tech companies. Make sure to hit the like and subscribe button and leave us a good rating wherever you're listening to this or watching this. Today, I bring you another expert interview together with Thomas here. Hey, Thomas, how you doing?
Hi, Joe. Nice to be here on your podcast.
Totally our pleasure. The reason you are here is very simple because you are one of the authors of the most recent report of the Startup Heat Map Europe, which I downloaded. I found very interesting. And so I thought, let's talk to the authors. And that's why we are here today. Can you tell us a little bit about the background, where this is coming from, and what you did in order to get this report of right now more than 80 pages together?
Yes, exactly. So the Startup Heat Map report is actually coming out for the fifth time already. For the last 5 years, it's been a steady publication. It is produced by entrepreneurs. So everyone in the Startup Heat Map team has an entrepreneurial background. We work in the startup scene. And 5 years ago, when we started, we were really interested to understand what are the cross-border relations of the startup communities in Europe. What's happening in terms of connecting across Berlin, London, but also other hubs like Frankfurt and all the countries in Europe. So what we did was designing a methodology to understand how these connections are growing. So one of the main elements we look at is the perception founders have of startup places. So that's why we also have this by now quite famous ranking of the most attractive startup hubs in Europe. Because we asked the founders, where would you go if you could choose freely in Europe? Where would you go to start your company? And that gives us this this prominent ranking. And it has been quite interesting to watch the changes in the rankings over the last 5 years. And one thing is interesting, the top 10, for example, is quite stable over the time. But you see developments that are, let's say, long-term trends. So, for example, that you see a more democratic landscape than before. The top hubs, when we started 5 years ago, London, Berlin, they were unreachable. They were 60% of the vote. Basically, everyone said, if I could choose, I would go to London, I would go to Berlin. Today, that picture is quite different. They reach something between 30 and 40% now. So that's a huge decline in, let's say, preference. And now we have like we have more cities that are on an equal footing, if you will.
Which is quite good. That means there are more and more places in Europe where you can successfully found a startup company. And I do believe let me quickly check the document I have here. Right now you have on your list, I do believe, 52 cities, and I would be more than happy if it would be 200 at one point in time.
Yes, indeed. It's actually more than the 52 that we publish. We track about 119 cities. In principle, you could name in the survey any city you like. I don't know, in the area of Frankfurt, there's probably some smaller cities that could also be named. I know my co-founder, for example, comes from Marburg. Marburg hasn't made it into top 50 yet, but still they have an interesting startup scene there. Nevertheless, we do try to track more cities than the most popular ones, because there's of course other factors as well at play. And this is what we have been building over the last 5 years, is more than this survey. We do have a database that tracks a lot of ecosystem dynamics. It starts really from simple things like investments. how do the investments develop? Also different sectors in like what is the fintech scene in the various places? What is the seed investments situation versus the total investments? Or looking at other dynamics that are less monetary. For example, you can look at diversity. How many female entrepreneurs do you have? You can look at the meetup scene. So we have collected about 100 metrics that we track, and they go from really diversity to community activity, transnational connections, expansion locations, how many unicorns opened an office in your city, and so on. So we really have like a large data set that allows us to understand the various developments in the cities. And on the website, on the startupheatmap.com, you can browse those metrics and see for the various cities the scores and rankings for each of the metrics.
Of course, as always, everybody can learn more down here in the show notes, and there is a link. And I just see the trust score of Frankfurt is 71%, which actually means right now nothing to me. Can you, like, before we get into yes. the survey data, actually tell us how to interpret the data we are seeing there?
Mm-hmm. So you're looking at the trust score, which is basically the popularity now. So this is based on the vote by the founders, and is calculated in relevance to the results of all cities. So simply said, the higher up in the ranking you are, also the higher the percentage is. When you now see a 71% for Frankfurt, then you would also see the rank next to it. And if I just click here and see it myself, so that would be the rank 34 in the whole of Europe, which is for Frankfurt probably not bad. It is it's not known as to be one of the top 10 hubs in Europe. It is fairly popular. People know it. There is some international connections as well that you can detect. People from outside Germany have voted for Frankfurt, have said, I can imagine to start my company here. But it's not like top of the mind of every founder in Europe yet.
Top of the mind, let us get a little bit into the executive summary and everything that goes with it. Basically, what did you do to get the Startup Heat Map 2021, Startup Heat Map Europe 2021 together? And what was like the major findings, and what was the finding that surprised you the most?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so the work for the heat map report takes almost a full year. It includes a survey of a representative sample of founders from all over Europe. So every year we're putting together the sample where we identify founders that we approach to fill the survey. We make sure that this is balanced in terms of the regions, and then we also correct these results so that if we don't have like the representativeness in a certain country, then we will correct the results in that manner. So we have a robust sample that's very important to understand, and that's why also it takes several months to run that survey. The survey gives us a lot of sentiment.
Actually, what I find very interesting is that you really directly select and approach entrepreneurs for the very simple reason I found many surveys to be skewed towards the bigger hubs, just for the simple reason that there are more people that can actually that either see it, that have the time to vote there, or just in total more people, more votes. So that also is something you guys are correcting, which I find very interesting, pretty good. And it gives a lot of smaller cities, like in terms of absolute number of startups, a much better visibility, a much better scoring than it would be otherwise, which I also find pretty good.
Yes, so we have one advantage here, but there's of course a lot of considerations when looking at the data. So what we saw with other surveys that are connected to an event, for example, is that you collect a lot of votes from survey participants from the participants of that particular event. And if that event is strong in a certain city or region, then you will have like a skewedness towards that. This is what we try to avoid by spreading our sample on this in this way. So it is very important for us to maintain that approach. It is of course making life a little bit harder because you need to identify the founders and then you need to approach them and ask them and you have a certain response rate. But in the end, I believe it's more robust. Also, we work with the population size and not with the, let's say, with the startup size or so the number of startups or the number of investments and so on. That's a difficult decision to take, but we believe that if we would use like existing databases to correct, let's say, for the number of startups, then we would have like, again, the problem that potentially the database is skewed towards a certain geography and has just a better representation of one country than the other. So if we use that, our sample would be again skewed. So what we used here is the most secure way of weighting our data, and that is the population.
Mm-hmm. I see. And getting a little bit into the data, what I liked was that you guys had a management summary. That's basically what you need to know. Despite Corona, the overall funding has grown by 14%. Was this like in line with the growth you've seen? Was it bigger? Was it smaller?
Yeah, so the executive summary basically is based on, okay, what happens in Europe in the startup scene in general? And again, here, this is beyond the survey. So we look at the data, we use different data sources like dealroom.co, Crunchbase, etc. And what we look at is the annual change of investment growth in Europe overall. And then we try to understand, is there like an effect by any external shocks, for example, COVID or Brexit, etc. And there was a shock by COVID. We actually would have had a stop of growth of funding in Europe if there weren't the government intervention. So what we were able to do is to divide between what is VC funding, let's say the typical VC funding, that's more from the private side. Of course, there's LPs that are state-backed as well. So you definitely have some government money inside the VC industry. But in principle, that has been stable over the past years already. So we didn't change the picture because of that. But then additionally, we had a lot of government interventions in 2020 that actually managed to maintain the growth of VC investments that we saw also in 2019, which was 14%. So also 2020, the VC investments grew by 14%, and that is thanks to the government interventions. If you count the government money in, you have a growth of 14%. If you wouldn't have counted the government money in, then it would have been stagnant and basically the same as 2019. So COVID did have an impact. It would have stopped the growth of the VC investments. It wouldn't have led to a decline. It wouldn't have been less than 2019. We would have had the same. But we, with the government funding, we even saw a growth of VC funding.
Mm-hmm. You also write about the challenges face competition. 27% of founders start their company abroad, which is pretty good for Europe. Do you have some kind of measure what those the share of founders who are from Europe and settle in another city, or who are really from abroad, like talking about Latin America, Africa, Asia, the US, Canada, and so on and so forth?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So first of all, it's very interesting to see that 27% of all the founders that we have in Europe are actually now working and living in a place that they didn't grow up in. And that's, by the way, the measurement we're using here. We ask the founders, where did you spend most time growing up? So it's not the nationality. Again, if you ask the nationality, you would have like, you wouldn't measure the same thing, because I have a co-founder who has grown up in Germany, but his nationality wasn't German. So is that now someone that really moved? No, he grew up here. So when he's still in Germany, he's not a not a mover for us.
And you do it based on like whole country. So that means I didn't grow up here in Frankfurt, but I would still not be considered being a founder abroad in your system here.
No, because you're still in the same country. We do have the city. We have the city level. So we even know that how many founders change the city. This percentage is around 40%, if I'm not wrong. So it's even higher, but that's natural. A lot of founders change the city to start up, but they stay within the country. Now, 27% is the average of all founders that are foreign born, which is quite high. If you consider that in Europe, on the individual level, only about 2% of the population is foreign born. So it's much more higher. But even more interesting, in the top hubs like Berlin or London, you have percentages of foreign born founders that is above 65%. So to be a top hub, you really see that effect. You need to have like a huge international base of founders coming to you. Because that's very logic. If you think the term hub means exactly this. You're a hub if people come to you, settle in your city to run their business there. That makes you a hub. And so if you want to be a top hub, you have to have a very, very high percentage of foreign-born founders. Exactly. But you were asking also how many people come from outside Europe. And that's it's very interesting. I will look up the number while we talk. But it's important to understand that migration is not following, let's say, the idea of, okay, everyone is moving from the poor countries to the rich countries. One interesting finding is, for example, that the highest outward mobility is from the UK. So UK-born or raised founders are the ones that are most likely to leave the UK and start in another country in Europe. But it's also the other way around, that the UK is the most likely to be chosen by other founders who leave their country. Right, so they also have the highest percentage of inbound migration. So there is quite a, we call this whirlwind. And there's in migratory studies here, there is this term, the whirlwind migration in the European continent. The whirlwind means you see migration from Western countries to other Western countries, if you want to use the term Western here. So you would see like the core European countries interchanging also in IT professionals, you see that. And you see that also with founders. You see a lot of change between the UK, Germany, France, the Nordics, and so on, Benelux. And then there is the other part of migration, which is from, let's say, from outside Europe or from CEE or Southern Europe to the Northern countries, Western countries, which is not much higher or even the same. So you don't have like only this stream from poor to rich, so to say, if you want to put it very bluntly. That is not the case. You actually have a very strong whirlwind migration. And then you have this, of course, also the attraction from non-European founders that come there. And we do see always a steady stream also of US-based, US-born founders that come to Europe that always have played a role, and they have come to Europe steadily over the 5 years. But let me just quickly get you the number. How many come from outside Europe?
I may just add, during the time you are looking up some data, that is like a popularity vote you have here. And Brexit pushed down London, where Berlin took over just in founder popularity. And also the visualization of event generated 50 to 160% growth rates in meetups in top hubs, where admittedly I've seen a lot of digital only, remote only events popping up. Let's say Corona hit stronger in March, and then in April, June, it started. It got really, really crazy around Christmas, before Christmas, and then it kind of dropped a little bit. But what I've always seen and heard was a lot of people just register for an event and actually don't show up. So the no-show rates are usually pretty high in terms of meetups. For example, I talked to the host of the FinTech Meetup Frankfurt, the biggest one in continental Europe, of FinTech meetups. And he says he has a no-show rate of at least a third. And in digital events, I do see sometimes even half of the people are just no-shows.
Yeah. And in free events, especially. Yes, yes, of course. But it's a very interesting statistic that you mentioned. Maybe I can, for the YouTube viewers, I can share my screen. Here you were mentioning this statistic about the effect of COVID, so to say, on the meetup landscape. Our assumption was when COVID hit that meetups would have taken a big hit. And we also saw, actually, the first thing we saw was that in our tracking system, where we were tracking various websites that are listing meetups and events, that many of them stopped doing that. So that was for us the first indication that we felt like, oh, wow, so meetups are not going to survive this. But then the source that was stable was meetup.com, so we now rely on this one. And here we saw an interesting development. Actually, the meetup attendance increased by 13%. Now, okay, attendance is the registered attendance, of course. So it might be an effect that fewer people actually joined the events, but that would be a stable change over all cities, I would say. And in general, the numbers went up. So the interest in joining meetups increased during the during COVID, which at least gives us a positive sign that the scene is alive. People were not turning away from entrepreneurship and saying like, oh, no, okay, so now there's nothing we can do anymore, we give up. No, they were active. They were looking for possibilities to still exchange, and meetups was a place they turned to. But even more interesting is that you see here there's a huge difference between the locations. And actually, in some places, you had that effect that the meetup attendance was decreasing. So, for example, if you look here, Madrid, -58%. So in Madrid...
Also notice Frankfurt -20%, unfortunately, but also apparently Munich had a big minus sign, -21%. And when I've seen this plus the +51% in Berlin, I was wondering if this digitalization remote only did not just lead to people just focusing more on their interest and less on physical location, which was just a thought I had in mind at this moment.
I think it is, yes. I think that people said, okay, I go to a meetup to learn something. Where are the best speakers? Where is the discussion happening that I want to join? Where do I learn something? And they went to the places that had the strongest brand. So you see, like here, the top hubs that people look out to, saying like, this is a hub where I feel something's happening, people were going to. So that, I think, is this effect. It was suddenly possible to join meetups virtually in other places. So you decided, would I go to my meetups in Madrid with speakers maybe from Madrid, or would I go to London where I have like a maybe the founder of a unicorn speaking at the meetup. So people were choosing to go to the to these places. And I think also for the speakers, I think it was the similar effect. Those meetups also got more interesting because suddenly they could invite speakers that were not from Europe, that maybe had a world rank. It was much easier to reach these guys because in a virtual world, you have a level playing field. You can invite basically everyone to join your meetup. And I think that is the effect here.
That is pretty interesting. What I found, what I even shared, on social media with very astonishing, dangerous developments in your highlights. Discrimination against women entrepreneurs amounted to 3 billion euros in 2020. How did you come up with that number? And have you seen data in the past? And can you make up a development there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we actually created a full report on female entrepreneurship in Europe end of last year. And for that, we analyzed a very interesting data set. So we created a data set of around 20,000 founders to identify how many female entrepreneurs we have in the top cities in Europe. So we really were keen on developing a city level database for 30 cities where we could say, okay, we have a representative sample for each of these cities saying how many female founders do they have. This works by the name of the person. So the algorithm detects the name and tells us, okay, out of those 2,000 founders we have in Berlin, so and so many are female. And with this, over like a large data set with 20,000, you could track like some 30 cities. And that was very interesting to see the percentage and the differences between the cities. So, for example, we found that Vienna had the highest percentage in all over Europe of female entrepreneurs, with 34% of female entrepreneurs. And that's a very interesting finding. In general, there's only 15.5% female entrepreneurs in Europe. That's the average in Europe. In this whole data set, 15.5% of founders are female. And here we're talking about founders and co-founders. Most statistics ask, does the startup have a female co-founder? And then they count as one and they divide it by the total number of startups. I think what we were able to confirm is that even if you count the number of individual founders, you get this percentage of people out of the total pool. That's very interesting because it makes a difference if you have one female founder in a team of four where three are male, or if you have two female founders in a team of three, right? Makes a difference. So we wanted to get behind that. Good thing is we confirmed the numbers that the others had as well. So in the end, it evens out. It's not that it makes a huge difference in the results, but it could have been. It's important that you do these checks. Now, the other question that is always in the media is how much VC funding goes to female founders. And there is a statistic out there that only 3% of VC funding goes to female founders. That is always based on that number of female-founded startups. And here what they do is they take the all-female startups. So they say, is the startup completely founded by women? And then they say, we count that one. And teams that are completely founded by women only raised 3% of the total VC funding in Europe. Now, this is a problem. I agree. There is very few all-female teams, and they also get very little VC funding. Okay. But it is not yet the end of the research we need to do. So we need to go a little deeper and understand what is the situation. So we try to understand what is the expected number of VC funding that female entrepreneurs would need to get. And we used that 15.5% number here and said, okay, if it is 15.5%, then they should reach also 15.5% of the VC funding, right? That would be the thought. And here we compared this perspective and saying like, okay, the female entrepreneurs, and here we take founders with had at least one female, startups with at least one female founder, how much percentage of VC funding did they get? And how much is the difference to this 15.5% of all VC funding? And that is 3 billion in 2020, which doesn't make their life much better for them. It is still, there's huge discrimination. It is definitely harder for women entrepreneurs to get VC funding.
I can totally see that. And now I'm sure how you can come up with the number. I have, 58% of startup community shrank due to the pandemic. I do believe just in total number of startups, entrepreneurs.
This is funding.
Funding. Okay. And internationalization rate of startups falls below 50%. What do you mean with that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we were looking at how international startups are by asking the founders whether they have international branches, or if they have hired international team members, or if they have raised from international investors. So we have asked for these different possibilities for internationalization. And then we do this over the years, and we see the development of the rate. So we see, does it increase? And until 2020, it did increase. Every year it was a little bit more. And now it fell below 50% for the first time. In 2019, it was something 60%, and now it fell to 48%. So the pandemic had an immediate effect here. And here we can really say it's an immediate effect, because we also asked the founders, how fast did that happen? And over the years, the founders told us internationalization for them happens in the first year. In the first year of establishment, internationalization is already happening in most of the cases. So when we see a drop in 2020, if people tell us in 2020 we are not international, that is an immediate effect of COVID, because it would have happened in the first year of establishment. And all those startups who took our survey that were in the first year didn't manage to establish international ties yet. That's why the number dropped.
I see. So basically, what we did right now was just going through the management summary. And as people could tell from your enthusiasm, there's like a lot in the almost 80 pages left there. We'll leave a link down here in the show notes for everybody to find the report. And before I say thank you very much and goodbye, what was for you the highlight? What was the most surprising piece of information, data point that you found in this survey?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's too much things to point it down to one thing, but for us,
top three also worked for
me. Top three works. Okay, so the main thing is more of a general observation, is this question: do we see a more democratic development, or do we see a more oligopolistic development in Europe? Because at the moment, we have still like the dominance of some small number of hubs: London, Berlin, maybe Paris. And then it's already getting very, very problematic. So this was a very oligopolistic structure. You have most of these hubs raise more than 50% of all the VC funding in Europe. Now, the question is that going to change over time? And as I said, the percentage of the vote that these hubs get is diminishing over time. Also, we saw that we have more and more cities where founders were able to raise more than 1 billion euro. So that's the so-called unicorn ecosystems, where the total amount raised in 1 year is above 1 billion euros. And now we have six cities that managed to do that. Six. It was only two in 2014. So it increased over the last 6 years dramatically, but it is still a small number. So for us, the most interesting question really is, what is the opportunity here? Will more cities raise to be prominent and functioning startup hubs with a functioning ecosystem that produce results? Or is this going to be a small club of a few cities where you see like continuously successful startups? I'm not talking about outliers, like one time you have like UiPath coming out of Bucharest and becoming like the most valuable startup in Europe. Okay, that happens. It's an outlier, I would say. But what we are interested in is Bucharest changing in an ecosystem that continuously strives and produces continuously successful startups like London and Berlin do already. And that is the question that still is out to be answered. We see tendencies to a more democratic ecosystem landscape, but it's still not decided. And also the question will be, how big will that club be? Will it be a very small club with maybe five or six players? Or will it be something where we have 30 cities in each country will have a functioning ecosystem? And that's still to be debated. And we try to understand the dynamics that lead to this.
Just only thing left for me to say, great closing words. The dynamics are yet to be understood. I personally would guess that there will be like 2025 big startup ecosystems here. Just in locations where you have like a lot of population, a lot of potential for good entrepreneurs. And over time, also the VCs need to get out and start looking beyond like the top three to top five hubs, because they are also in competition. That's at least what I hope. And there'll be a lot, hopefully a lot more interesting startups discovered by them. Thomas, who's just a pleasure having you here. You'll share the link with me after the recording, and so everybody can download from the show notes the report. Thank you very much.
Thank you as well.
If you are a professional looking at the European startup scene, Germany is a place you cannot miss. Fortunately for you, there is startuprad.eu, the authority on German startups. This English-only podcast brings you fresh interviews each week. Most likely, you have never heard or read anything on these startups before in English, but you will in the future. Be ahead of the curve and subscribe to startuprad.eu podcast, or check for the startuprad.eu internet radio station. Check your Alexa for the startuprad.eu skill as well.